chapter 21, Exodus chapter 21. As we've taken the time to talk about the burnt offering in terms of God, I give you all of me. To talk about the grain offering, God, I give you all that I have. And God, in turn, to make everything holy of what you have and how even looking at how we use it. Brent and I talked this past week. We will cover the peace offering. We're going to take next week and do that. So we've changed that. Last week, to talk about the sin offering of seeing when fellowship is lost with God, there has to be a Lamb of God to bring us back into fellowship with Him. And so many of the things that we'll look at today in the trespass offering do have a lot of parallel with the sin offering. But if you want a little bit of difference in how you think about them, a trespass offering said basically, I don't love my neighbor who's made in your image. In other words, I have failed you. I have invaded upon the rights of someone else that God had ordained as their rights, not something that we would conjure up or think of. And if you remember from Leviticus 22, that you could not offer up a gift offering to God, in other words, a burnt offering or a grain offering, or even we'll find out later, a peace offering, unless you had fellowship with God. God did not want your gift if you did not have fellowship with Him to share in His life and what He desires, which is kind of something. Now, as you think about these trespass offerings, a sin offering was really about if you were to break one of the, in general, the first five of the Ten Commandments. In other words, the rights that God has, you have treaded upon them in order to need to offer up a sin offering. You didn't care about using His name in holiness. You chose someone or something else, in other words, to break what He deserves in terms of being God and to set things apart as holy. The trespass offering is about treading upon and violating the rights of our neighbor. Now, maybe you think through this, and I want you to kind of help me through this. So oftentimes you see these, within the law, these commands that are given, and to see that there's a protection that's going on here. So I want you to kind of help me fill in the blanks here. Whenever you think about God saying, you're not to murder, what is being protected? Life is being protected, right? Life is seen as valuable. Then the next commandment, you shall not commit adultery. What is being protected? Marriage. Marriage is something that God wants to protect and to stand up for. He says, you shall not steal. What's being protected? Property, possessions. Then you think in terms of the next one, might be a little bit more difficult. Whenever he says, you shall not bear false witness. What's being protected? Justice is the idea. Truth is definitely an aspect of it. But to go, justice is what's held in honor. That God is a just God. And so if someone's going to bear false witness, you are going to really corrupt justice. Even to the point where Deuteronomy 19:21 talks about if a false witness shows up that, and they bear false witness, that whatever the penalty was being sought after for the person who's on trial, now that false witness will bear the same penalty of what was being sought after. And it goes so far that it talks about, even in terms of life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. And in that one instance about justice, God says, and you are to show no pity. You could not have mercy because they have kept justice from taking place. Which tells you how serious God is about justice. Now, the last of these last of the Ten Commandments says, shall not covet. So what's being protected there? Okay, we think about belongings are being protected. Maybe another thing is being protected. Think of, how about contentment? What do you think God's wanting from us? Look, don't covet. Don't be looking out and going, I want what they have and I'm willing to break the rules to get it. He says, where's contentment in all this? Now, you look across the board at these things, and I'm going to show you just a few examples of this, maybe so that we can get a little tread on the tires. But Exodus chapter 21, look down at verse 22. If men struggle with each other and strike a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet there is no injury, he shall surely be fined as the woman's husband may demand of him, and he shall pay as the judges decide. Now, make sure and have you read this. Don't necessarily assume that her husband is part of this fight. I hear sometimes people read through this and they go, well, if her husband's in a fight with some other guy, it doesn't say that her husband's in the fight. Pick up on that. Now, could he be? Sure. Does he have to be? No. So here's a woman who's pregnant, and because of what she has taken by means of these two men who are in a fight, and all of a sudden she gives birth to this child early, we would say premature, and all of a sudden, notice what has to be addressed. Where does the first conversation happen? You're going to have to talk to her husband. And you think, well, is she bruised? Is a bone broken? Is something now missing in terms of cutting something off with a knife? And you realize, okay, you talk to the husband. He says, and he shall be fined as the woman's husband may demand of him. You didn't control your anger, and it caused pain to somebody else or even violence. And to say, here's what he demands. It says, and he shall pay as the judges decide. And then this husband would then take what he demands to who next? We're going to take this to the judge. He doesn't just get to make up and go, well, you have to do this for me. He says, he comes up with his demands. It goes before a judge. And then whenever the judge decides, here's the outcome of the penalty. Then, verse 23, he says, but if there is any further injury, then you shall appoint as a penalty life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, and bruise for bruise. Now you think about that. Here you are, and realize what he's talking about in verses 23 through 25 covers not only the situation with the wife who may be bruised or injured, but also covers what happens to the child, which tells you, what's God protecting? Life, even an unborn child. Now, notice here, you imagine what this looks like. Because of this raging fight between these two men, all of a sudden, one of them makes this move across with this right hook and knocks out this woman's tooth. All of a sudden, what's justice going to demand? Your tooth has to come out. How do you feel about that? And also to realize, is it justice? And what is really being addressed? How you affect your neighbor matters to God, right? No matter how severe. I mean, you think to the point of, if this child is delivered early and dies, what's the penalty? Death. I mean, you see the aspects of what's at hand here. Now, what you really find out is, can you treat God's children any old way you want to? Before God and have fellowship with God? No. Not at all. Now, from what we've learned about the grain offering, you would come and you would offer up your offering of fine flour or whatever else. We've already gone through that. And the priest would take that memorial portion, he would put it on the altar, and then all of a sudden, it would be made holy, and what would happen to everything else that you had in that crop? It's all made holy too. So now, here's all your possessions, in terms of your grain, specifically for that offering, of going, they've all been made holy to God. So we make sure and remember to treat them as holy and use them as holy. Notice, in Exodus chapter 22, look at verse 1. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall pay 5 oxen for the ox and 4 sheep for the sheep. Now, notice here, and we're really dealing in terms of something called restitution. Same way if you injured a man's wife, even his unborn child, he says, there is restitution to be made. Now, it doesn't necessarily make everything feel better. But in the same sense of going, look, there's a payment to be made for what you've done. Here, you start going in and go, all right, you steal 1 ox. What are you going to have to pay back? 5. I mean, this kind of restitution, if you start putting it in percentages of going, in some instances, you may have to pay 500% according to what you took. For sheep, how many? 4. Now, realize how quickly this adds up. What if you took 4 sheep? 16. Now, you realize, you go, well, here's your 4 back. Is that enough? No, you can't say, well, I returned what I stole, so I'm good, right? It says, no. It doesn't work that way. Now, what do you see God protecting here? It's not sheep and oxen. Property. He says, look, you cannot treat your neighbor's things any old way you want and think it's okay with God. And you realize what's going on here about losing fellowship with God. Here's a little bit more about the thief, verse 2. If the thief is caught while breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there will be no blood guiltiness on his account. Now, look at this picture. Here he is, and you'll see, let's go ahead and look at verse 3 so you understand 2 better. He says, but if the sun has risen on him, there will be blood guiltiness on his account. So if a thief comes in at night in the midst of darkness, and you kill him, is there any blood on your hands? None whatsoever. So a thief breaking in at night is really doing what? He's taking his life in his own hands. And if you kill him, you're innocent. However, if the sun has risen and he breaks in and you kill him, now what's the difference? You're accountable. Because now you can see what's going on, and you know, look, he's not going to hurt us anymore, and he's still alive, and that's okay. You don't have a right just because somebody breaks in your home and you can see what's going on to go, hey, I can kill you and you'll be just fine. He says, no, it wasn't that way. So you also notice as it goes on, verse 3, he says, he shall surely make restitution. Now that's the thief. He says, he's got to make restitution in this. He says, if he owns anything, then he shall be, if he holds anything, he says, then he shall be sold for his theft. Now, catch on to this. If you remember in the sin offering, if you couldn't afford something, there was a way for you to regain fellowship with God. It could be downgraded onto what it would affect you. When it comes to treading upon the rights of your neighbor, what do you find out here? If you don't have the means to repay, you will now become a slave. You'll be put into debtor's prison. And if you notice the way he says it, he'll be sold for his theft. And maybe you start thinking through situations in the New Testament. And if you really stop and think about it, what Jesus even says in terms of Matthew 5, he says, make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. He says, truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up the last cent. You realize Jesus is even referring to some of these same things when he teaches in Matthew 5:25 and 26. Then notice what else goes on here, verse 4, back in Exodus 22. If what he stole is actually found alive in his possession, whether an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall pay double. Whoa. Now, double of what? Remember what the rate is? If you're a thief and you get caught and you still have it with you, he says, you'll pay double. So if you stole a bull, he says, or an ox, he says, how many you got to pay back? Five, and now you double it. Is being a thief very productive monetarily? When you talk about digging a deep hole really quick. Now, once again, and the idea here is what? What's God trying to communicate? Don't steal anything. Don't covet your neighbor's things. Now, you may think back, in Luke chapter 19, you may remember a tax collector, a chief tax collector by the name of Zacchaeus. And as he encounters Jesus, and they're going back to Zacchaeus' own house, Zacchaeus says to Jesus, I'll give half of, if I have wronged anybody, he says, I'll pay them back four times as much. Zacchaeus, someone who understood the old covenant. Yeah. He was, and it's not as if he's saying, and sometimes I hear people talk about him this way, like, oh man, he was a big thief. No, he's just saying, if I've taken anything from anybody, I'll pay back four times as much. And you realize he's saying, and he even says, I'll give half of what my possessions to the poor. But as part of that, you see what he's working off of, are these Old Testament principles. Now, look at how this continues. Verse 5. If a man lets a field or vineyard be grazed bare and lets his animal loose so that it grazes in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. So if I go, you know what, here's my animals, and they've eaten up all the pasture and all, everything that's there, the grass, and I go, well, I don't have anything else, but there's my neighbor's land. Well, there's no fence in between it. I'll just let them graze on my neighbor's land. This will be good. It'll be free. And then you realize all of a sudden you get caught, and what's he got to pay back? He says, you have to, in order to make restitution, you have to give back from the best of your own field and the best of your own vineyard. So now you go, oh, this is a good idea. And then you realize, my best, and how do you usually feel about your best? And if you grow crops, there are certain parts of your field that grow better crops than other parts, because of different variations, but going, oh, I have to give my best? You, not just an average, just giving the best. Then it brings down your average. Then, notice how this continues on. Look at verse 6. He says, if the fire breaks out and spreads to thorn bushes, so that stacked grain or the standing grain of the field itself is consumed, he who started the fire shall surely make restitution. Once again, you see this idea about restitution. And we'll start to see as it goes. Restitution, there's going to be a general rule for things. We're reading through some of the exceptions first. But typically you're going to find restitution is you have to pay back 120%. It's going to use terms like, you'll have to give back all that was taken and an additional fifth. In other words, a double tithe, 20%. So here you are, you let these, you're just burning some thorn bushes, and all of a sudden the fire gets out of control and it takes out your whole neighbor's field, and you have fields of your own that are comparable, and you go, in order to pay it back, not only will you have to give all your harvest of that year to get the initial part back, the second year, you'll have to give how much? 20%. Is this a major deal? Think you ought to be careful with fire? Certainly. Now, notice how it continues. We'll look at just a couple more. Look over at Leviticus chapter 5. I'll show you another one. We get lost in time here. Leviticus chapter 5, look at verse 1. Now, if a person sins after he hears a public adjuration to testify when he is a witness, whether he has seen or otherwise known, if he does not tell it, then he will bear his guilt. Once again, here it is, some event takes place, maybe something's stolen, maybe a fire starts, any of these situations we've kind of been talking about, and you are a witness, and they make a public cry to all the community and say, does anybody know anything about Farmer Smith's grain that went down? It was standing grain. And here you are, and you saw it all happen, and you decide, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to be part of this. I love my brother, and I know it was his fault, but I love these people who they lost what's theirs. I just do not want to step into this. What does he say? You're guilty. What are you keeping from happening? Justice. Once again, God is very serious about justice and righteousness, among other things. He says he will bear his own guilt. Now, you see all these different situations that we've kind of looked at just to kind of give you a general idea. So here you are, you've wronged, you have crossed over and violated the rights of those who are here, talking about more so in Israel, and to go, I've lost fellowship with God because I'm not loving my neighbor. I'm taking advantage of my neighbor. And all of a sudden, here I am, maybe I've done some of these things, and here I am sitting and listening to the reading of the law in the synagogue or on the Sabbath, and I hear one of these things that I've done. I go, you know what? I did hear about that situation that happened, and I did not respond. I've lost fellowship with God. And you'll see the trespass offering talked about as a guilt offering in the same way. And realize this. Whenever you trespass upon your neighbor's rights, who have you also sinned against? You sinned against God's standard of what he desires for us to love one another. Loving him first, of course. Look down in Leviticus chapter 5 to verse 14. You'll see these things specifically brought out. And we'll talk a little bit more about what's at hand here. He says, then the Lord spoke to Moses saying, if a person acts unfaithfully and sins unintentionally against the Lord's holy things. Now remember, your neighbor's things, if they've offered up a grain offering, have become what? They're holy. And notice, I'm going to use these to what God desires. He says, against the Lord's holy things, that he shall bring his guilt offering to the Lord, covenant God, a ram without defect from the flock, according to your valuation in silver by shekels, in terms of the shekel of the sanctuary for a guilt offering. Now you have to bring it to God. And you realize, the next statement, I need to offer up this offering, but there's still something that has to be addressed first. Verse 16. He shall make restitution for that which he has sinned against the holy thing, and shall add to it a fifth part of it, and give it to the priest. The priest shall then make atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering, and it will be forgiven him. You notice how it's worded? If you don't make restitution, is the priest going to do anything? He says, there has to be restitution made, then the priest will offer up your ram for this offering, so that you can be forgiven. You can't just take advantage of your neighbors, come before God and go, God, I want to be forgiven. And him go, oh, that's fine. Don't worry about them. He says, no, don't you even come and offer a guilt offering to me until you have addressed what you've done to your neighbor. Now, this gives us a little more insight about what it means to truly love your neighbor. Even if the fire was an accident, you're still held accountable. Notice how it continues, verse 17. Now, if a person sins and does any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, though he was unaware, I didn't know. Does that bring in an excuse? He says, still he is guilty and shall bear his punishment. He says, even if unknowingly it happened, is restitution still demanded? Certainly. Verse 18. He is then to bring to the priest a ram without defect from the flock according to your valuation for a gift offering, for a guilt offering. So the priest shall make atonement for him concerning his error in which he sinned unintentionally and did not know it, and it will be forgiven him. It is a guilt offering. He was certainly guilty before the Lord. So you notice, even if you're unaware, even if it was unintentional, still held accountable? Certainly so. Now, looking at chapter 6, let's talk a little bit about the layout of the true offering within itself as the trespass offering. Leviticus chapter 6, look at these first five verses. He says, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, when a person sins and acts unfaithfully against the Lord and deceives his companion in regard to a deposit or a security entrusted to him, in other words, you might give a down payment, like maybe as a as an ox cart, and then once you paid it off, you'd get your down payment back. He says, or entrusted, security entrusted to him, or through robbery, something stolen, or if he has extorted from his companions. Amos chapter 8 talks about if you have an unjust weights or an unjust scale, and you think, if you're going to try and basically be a huckster and take advantage of people, he says, you'll be found guilty. Even if you did it unknowingly. Can you imagine trying to have an honest business, and then all of a sudden you realize one of your workers or whatever mislabeled a weight, and you come to realize, how long have I been taking advantage of my brothers and sisters? How do I make this right? You realize you're going to have to go and find a valuation and try and make it right. And you realize restitution has to be made before you can come and offer up a trespass offering. Then verse 3, or has found what was lost? Are you a finders, keepers, losers, weepers kind of person? No matter how you twist it, what does God say? If you find it, it's not yours. He said, I find myself nowadays, I see money on the ground, I go, I don't want anything to do with that. But you look at what's here, in making these statements, he says, or has found what was lost and lied about it and swore falsely so that he sins in regard to any one of the things a man may do. Verse 4, then it shall be when he sins and becomes guilty, that he shall restore what he took by robbery or what he got by extortion or the deposit which was entrusted to him or the lost thing which he found or anything about which he swore falsely. He shall make restitution for it in full and add to it one-fifth more. I tell you, picking up a $20 bill doesn't sound so great anymore. Because if it's ever found out whose it is, I'm going to have to pay him $24. You ask, oh man, this is getting out of hand. So, you start kind of noticing here, God protecting the rights of the people that he has given to them. Then, notice here, he says, add one-fifth more to it. He shall give it to the one to whom it belongs on the day he presents his guilt offering. He says, here it is. You have been paid back in full, plus 20% or you know the variations that are there. If you stole an oxen, you're going to have to take back five. Then you come. And so here we are, verse 6. Then he shall bring to the priest his guilt offering to the Lord, a ram without defect from the flock according to your valuation for a gift offering. Guilt offering. He says, and the priest shall make atonement for him before the Lord, and he will be forgiven for any one of the things, you catch that, any one. So if you extorted and you lied and you had unjust weights, how many of these will you have to make? Three. Oh. Are you realizing this isn't going so well monetarily for you if you're a thief or a scoundrel? Oh, wow. This is not a good decision. Correct. It's not a good decision. It's going to cost you fellowship with God. So, here you are, you want to make this trespass offering. You realize you've treaded upon the rights of your brothers and sisters. And you go, all right, first of all, I have to go make restitution to the one that has been violated. Then I have to bring an animal without defect to God for every violation that I had. And then here I come to present this animal that's without defect. And then if you notice the next aspect of this, I want you to look up, come back, we're going to come back here, but look over at Numbers chapter 5. Numbers chapter 5. Look at verses 5 through 8. And so at this point, you come to some similarities between the sin offering. You're going to lay your hand upon the head of this animal, which is the best animal you have. And if you don't have one that's without defect, then guess what you have to go do? You've got to petition some neighbor to be able to buy one or find a market to buy one. How do you think that's going to go? You ever tried to buy the highest value and grade of beef? It's kind of expensive. It's real expensive. Go buy some Wagyu beef. See what you think. And buy the highest grade. You're going to find a lot of empty wallets. But you start looking through here, and what he says, you're going to lay your hand on the head of this animal. It's now going to stand in your place. Then, Numbers chapter 5, verse 5. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel. When a man or a woman commits any of the sins of mankind, acting unfaithfully against the Lord, and that person is guilty, then he shall confess his sins, which he has committed, and he shall make restitution in full for his wrong, and add to it one-fifth of it, and give it to him whom he has wronged. But if the man has no relative to whom restitution may be made for the wrong, the restitution which is made for the wrong must go to the Lord for the priest, besides the ram of atonement, by which atonement is made for him. Notice how far this goes. Even if you don't have, the person who you wronged is not still alive, who do you have to look for next? A relative. If they don't have a relative who's alive, are you off the hook? Now you bring the restitution and everything, and you give it to the priest, plus the 20%. And then you still have to do what? Make your offering. And so it's like, well, nobody will find out. Even you find out 60 years later, or whatever number you want to pick out of the air, you're still held accountable, which tells you a little something about how God sees things. You can't just treat your neighbor any way you want and be fine. Now, notice he talks about these things together, and it's at this point you have to actually confess what you did and tell them. Because if you've made three violations, even if it's part of this one event, which sin is this for? Which trespass is this for? It's not just a general thing. And you go, that means I'm going to have to bring three rams. It means I'm going to have to slay three animals. I have to put my head on the hand, on the head of each one of these. Now, come back over to Leviticus chapter 7. As you see these things together, real quickly, he says, this is the law of the guilt offering. It is most holy. In the place where they slay the burnt offering, they shall also slay the guilt offering, and he shall sprinkle its blood around on the altar. And you realize we're as far out within the tabernacle as we can be around the burnt offering, the altar burnt offering. Verse 3, then he shall offer from it all its fat, the fat tail and the fat that covers the entrails and the two kidneys with the fat that's on them, which is on the loins and the lobe of the liver, he shall remove with the kidneys. Remember, the fat is all the Lord's. Leviticus 3:16. The fat is the best part. Now, I want you to think about that. And of course, the rest is going to be burned outside the camp on these offerings. Here's Jesus, our trespass offering. In the New Testament, it has a word specifically for this type of event. In talking about restitution, have you ever run across the word in the New Testament propitiation. That's what we're talking about. Jesus was offered up to be our propitiation, to pay back the restitution that was owed because of all the ways that we sinned against our neighbors. Whether good, bad, or indifferent, there's really no indifferent. When you start looking at this and go, here's Jesus, our propitiation. And it talks about it in Hebrews. It talks about it in 1 John. It talks about it in Romans 3. And here's Jesus. And you go, we come to him. And Hebrews 10 talks about him sprinkling the blood on our hearts whenever we're washed in pure water, whenever we're baptized. Whenever we come to Jesus in our sins, before we ever encountered Christ, what had to be dealt with? All the wrongs that we had done with our neighbors. Now, he doesn't say, okay, you owe 10 million lambs or rams or bulls. Jesus says, I'll bear that penalty. I'll pay your price. Propitiation is about a payment that satisfies what is owed. I'll pay your 500%. I'll pay your 120%. I'll pay your 400% here. We came to him whenever we are baptized into Christ, and we put our hand on his head. And we confessed our sin by repenting, going, I'm not going to go back there anymore. And Jesus bore our guilt. When you read through the gospel accounts in Matthew, Mark, it talks about Jesus being scourged. And when you think about someone who is innocent taking your place and putting your hand on the head of Jesus and going, I'll bear the lash because of what you stole. I'll bear and pay for the sin that you committed when you would not stand up to bear witness when you knew what needed to happen. Because of your raging anger, you hurt your neighbor. I will bear and pay for that restitution. Because that child that she was bearing died after giving birth, I will bear and pay for that restitution. Because you didn't care about that fire out in the field and it took down your neighbor's property, I'll make restitution for you. He bore our trespasses. We put our hand on his head and we looked in his eyes and he looked in ours and we said, I have not loved my neighbor. Will you pay back what I owe? Because I can't pay it. I can't put a value on it. I can't assess it. And he looked at us and said, I'll pay your restitution. I'll bear your guilt so that you can have fellowship with God. When we start looking at the price of what it costs when we wrong one another, slander, gossip, anything along those lines, realize who paid the price. And how do you feel when someone, the best of the field, the one without defect, the one who is the fat, the greatest portion, says, I will bear restitution for you. It should change the way we look at our neighbor. It should change the way we love one another. Knowing, how would it make you feel if anyone was willing to step in and take the scourging for you? Knowing they did no wrong whatsoever to pay for our lack of love. It's a place that's worth meditating on and thinking about, and by it causing a change within us to really love one another as Christ has loved us. All right. Have a good week. We'll come back with a peace offering next week.